Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Listening to the film show on yes. Sheffield Live. I'm Denise.
I'm Martin, and we are struggling with some technical problems. Getting
we
our
are
music
experiencing technical difficulties. As I said.
Although we may be playing that again as of the moment. We don't have any music apart from that from our Jim Jarmusch tribute week a few weeks ago. We are working on it, but in the meantime, we've got a fair bit of stuff to get through, haven't we?
We have. The miracle could happen, or you'll just be listening to us singing the tracks that I picked for this week's exciting selection.
I'll just go. okay, right. We'll start with some news from the world of film in Sheffield. And next weekend from the
Sensoria.
Second Sensoria film and digital festival, film music and digital festival, is on in Sheffield, and there are a number of events taking place over the weekend. Not as many film related events as previous years, but there is a lot of very interesting stuff on there. If you look on the website, you can have a look for some of the guests and some of the industry events that are taking place as part of the festival over next week. And one event which is taking place a couple of weeks' time, and you won't be able to go and see because it's sold out, is a reunion gig for Sheffield's very own Cabaret Voltaire.
Are you going?
I'm not going to this one. I'm going to one in London in, I think it's November. I am looking forward to that. It's coming under the umbrella of the festival, and I hope the festival goes swimmingly well. Right.
That's your pick, then.
Yes.
Yep. Well, there's news about Crystal Peaks,
yes,
isn't
there?
Yes,
sort of, we heard a rumour, didn't we, some months back, that an application had been put in to construct a cinema at the Crystal Peaks shopping centre. For those of you who don't remember, Crystal Peaks was the site of Sheffield's very first multiplex cinema back in 1988, when the UCI 10-screen cinema opened. These things were very, very strange back then. I lived over that way at the time. And it was even weirder to be able to walk from your house and go to the cinema. And it went through a number of different name changes until, I think it was in 2003, it was finally closed and it's become a Sainsbury's supermarket. But the plan now is to open a 4-screen cinema there. Well, it's more than a plan. The construction has already started. There is going to be four screens there. They're going to be quite bijou auditoriums, sized for about 70 seats each, and there's going to be four auditoriums there. And I'm assuming it will be early next year when it's all there, up and running. And I'm sure we will be running a report from there once it's in business, and that'll be another film venue for Sheffield, which already has over 60 cinema screens at its disposal as we speak. So, more or less, I don't know. But we'll be looking forward to see what comes of that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm freewheeling a bit here as we're still trying to get the music up. So.
Well, I'm touching buttons and,
you are.
And playing with knobs. I am listening.
I'm sorry. More big piece of news maybe for the British film industry is Marvel Studios are planning to move their production from Georgia in the United States over to the United Kingdom. Marvel has been shooting many of its films in Georgia for the past 15, 20 years now, and they have a really big film production facility in the state. However, to try and cut costs, they're going to move their film production from there and over to the United Kingdom, which has a surfeit of studios and technical expertise here. Now, strangely enough, only a few months ago, President Trump was talking about how American films should be made in America. Are we in business? We're in business. I can stop talking in a minute. Now, the reason, the main reasons that they're moving from the United States over to Europe, and especially to the United Kingdom, is quite illuminating. It's because the The United Kingdom, which is National Health Service, has much lower staffing costs. If you work for Marvel Studios over in the States, you get free healthcare, or at least healthcare that Marvel Studios pays for you, which is incredibly expensive. But by coming to the United Kingdom and employing British people to do the job, it doesn't cost them anything for a health cover. And that's a strange way round it, but there you go. I don't know what Donald's going to think of that, that move is set to start in the very near future. And I say already there is a lot of production going on in this country, but there will be even more now.
Exciting, maybe?
I mean, you know me and Marvel films, I can take them all, well, I can leave them most of the time.
But it's a lot of work, a lot of employment.
It's an awful lot of money, yeah. And hopefully that will be like ancillary stuff that will come from that, and maybe it will be more than just Marvel films, you know. But if you like them, you like them. I've lost it with them. I'm not making a qualitative judgment. I just couldn't be bothered trying to
find it. Feels
like
a production line more than a...
So we've got some RIPs. Which one should I do first? You do one. I can't talk anymore.
That's not the best bell, is it? Claudio Cardinale.
Yes. A sad, sad... We had Robert Redford last week, and another giant of cinema from the 60s and 70s there.
Very similar age as well, yeah.
So he was 87. Yeah. Born in Tunisia to Sicilian parents, and came to public's attention by winning Most Beautiful Italian Girl in Tunisia in 1957. A niche award, I would have thought.
And there were lots of beautiful ladies.
And which then started her career in Italian cinema, where she wasn't always... Her voice wasn't very much liked to start off, because she spoke mainly French, being in Tunisia. And when she spoke Italian, she had a strong Italian, a strong Sicilian accent. And it took a while before people become accustomed to a unique voice. But it did end up becoming a voice that was accepted by Italian audiences. So she... by the early 60s, she appears in this bunch of like films that have gone on to become so famous in world cinema. She works with Visconti in Rocco and His Brothers, and most famously with Visconti, The Leopard with Alain Delon, Burt Lancaster. She's in 8 and a Half by Fellini with Marcello Mastroianni. And... for English-speaking audiences, she becomes well-known from being in Pink Panther.
I was going to say that. there will be lots of people in her home country kind of going, oh, she did more than the Pink Panther guys.
You know, we're in a bit of a Terrence Stamp situation. Yeah. Oh, generals. And she was in over 150 films. So she made loads and loads of films in Europe. But... I would put forward as maybe her most famous film, both to foreign and English speaking audiences, is Once Upon a Time in the West, Sergio Leone's epic Western from 1968. Now, where we are with music, we won't be playing any of Morricone's stuff this week,
but we're next going to week. Be.
And we will be playing some stuff from Once Upon a Time in the West there. But quite, you know, he's someone who's passed away this week, with who is associated with one of the most famous pieces of film music ever composed, I think. And her career went on for over 40 years. And dotted within that are these things where she comes to the fore. If you think she's in Fitzcarraldo, Herzog's film, with about Klaus Kinski dragging a boat over a mountain to build an opera house. And there's some really interesting reviews about Cardinale in that film, because she's not in all of it. In fact, she doesn't go over the mountain with him, but she's the woman who finances his expedition. And there's been a couple of reviews that have said that the scenes that she shares with Kinski, she humanises him.
Mm.
He can be an unpleasant actor to watch.
Yeah.
You know, not worrying about what his character might be. Mm. He can be. And it's true. She brings a sort of humanity to him in the scenes they have together, which are so rare, I think, within his entire career. And I think that was a beautiful way of describing her and what she could bring to a film. So I'm really sad about that.
And usually as well, later on in her career, she was in some... in French theatre as well.
Yes,
you know, she went back into that.
And she was a UNESCO ambassador as well. I was really greatly saddened by her, this one.
Oh, and I've got another one for you.
Do you know... Henry Jaglom.
Now, I've got to admit...
I know everyone at home is going, who?
I've got to admit, I had to do a bit of a Google on this one. Sorry.
Possibly one of the most unsung heroes of American independent cinema, Henry Jaglom, a man whose career was pretty much him making films about himself, his life, and also looking at the position and the life experiences of women in the United States, many of which he made in collaboration with his wife, Victoria Hoyt. But Jaglom came out of this group of filmmakers in the late 60s, the BBS crowd, which were made up of three guys who had started the Monkees TV show, Bob Rafelson, Bert Schneider, and Paul Blauner, I think it was. And they made a fortune out of this. And weirdly, you know, like Jack Nicholson wrote lots of the scripts for the Monkees.
Wait, what? Jack Nicholson wrote scripts to the Monkees? You just dropped in there?
The first thing they did, they made a Monkees film called Head. Which
I have seen. That was quite popular in the 90s.
You look in the background, though. Dennis Hopper's there. Jack Nicholson's there. Bob Rafelson's there. They're working on it. Bob Rafelson directed it. And so the film was a complete and utter flop, even though the television series had been... But the next film they made changed everything. So the next film they made was Easy Rider. And Jaglom was drawn into this crowd of filmmakers, and he was an editor on
Easy Rider, didn't he? Yeah,
I think there were several people. Yeah. It went on for days when they did the first cut of it, so yeah, there was a lot of editing needed. And then Jaglom eventually works up to making one of these films under the BBS name. I mean, just for some of the other films, it was such things as say Easy Rider, Five Easy Pieces, King of Marvin Gardens. My brain's just gone to Peter Bogdanovich one, Black and White, Jeff Bridges, Sybil Shepherd.
Oh, Last Picture Show.
Last Picture
Show. Yeah.
I'm running on fumes here.
I haven't really contributed much. I'm glad I got something in.
That was a lifesaver. And Jaglom gets to make his first film, which is called A Safe Place, which is Jack Nicholson, Tuesday Weld and Orson Welles. A very small, intimate piece, as most of Jaglom's films were. And he sort of cuts this very idiosyncratic furrow, let's say, through American cinema for the next 50-odd years. His films can be quite hard to get hold of and see. And I'd also say they can be an acquired taste. You know, not much happens in them. But that's no bad thing. I don't think there'll ever be anyone else like him. He also became a friend and associate of Orson Welles and was helping him try and get finances for more films up until the end of Welles' life, and conducted a series of interviews with him, which were then published in a book My Lunches with Orson. So a really singular talent. And I think if you ever get a chance to see one of his films, I'd really recommend that you do.
But difficult to get hold of, though. And you know,
I mean, many of these films that he's made for the past 30-odd years, they've been shown at festivals and when they've gone down a storm, you know, but he's never had that big success. I think the closest he came to having a film that had any popular success was way back in 1976 with a film called Tracks, which starred Dennis Hopper as a returning Vietnam vet escorting a coffin across America on a train with one of his dead comrades in. And as the train goes across America, Hopper's character begins to fall apart with, as you can imagine, terrible consequences by the time the train reaches its destination. It's a pretty astonishing film. It's all filmed on the train. It's an incredible, incredibly shot film.
You're making me want to watch these films I can't get hold of, Martin.
I'll see what I can do. Well, if nothing else, if it makes you aware of him, when you see that name, you might take the opportunity. And I'm not saying you should immediately, but knowing that he's out there, I think, can sometimes be the first step towards getting your hands on some of this stuff.
We've got some trailer trash as well, haven't we, this
week? Thank God.
Yeah, thank goodness, because
there could have been a lot of trailer trash.
We are about to press play on some music, but we are not 100% sure that any music's going to come out, so, you
know.
Touch
and go.
So, trailer trash this week. This looks good. This looks good. The Bride. I wasn't conscious of this film really coming. I must have missed
it's
the chat about
it.
But Jessie Buckley, she's great, right? And Christian Bale, Jake Gyllenhaal. The trailer looks
Annette Bening.
Oh yeah. It looks how can you describe it? It kind of looks dreamy and beautiful colours. Bride of Frankenstein. I'm watching it now. I'm just stuck watching it.
That's not good radio.
No, it's not good radio. Jessie Buckley, she's so good in anything she's in.
Yeah,
I know you don't like that one with Olivia Colman.
Yeah.
But she's still good in it. It looks moody. She looks like proper 1920s Bride of Frankenstein. White makeup, white hair.
She hasn't got the streak, has she, in her hair? Like
no, but like, she's like, got like a. She's, instead, she's got this sort of oil streak on her face instead. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's set in the 1930s, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks 20s, 30s America.
Yeah. Well, it certainly looks striking. And I don't think it's not going to be until into early 2026 when it's released.
Mm-hmm.
But it's directed. Did we say it was directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal?
No, we didn't.
I can't remember if we said that. Yes.
Right.
And her husband, Peter Sarsgaard, is in it. I took the we there because I wanted
yeah,
to say.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Thanks.
I'm not here accusing you.
But it's the mother of the fluffing bride.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
I like it. I'm liking the look of it.
Which is more than I can say for the next film we have. Something which I would pay good money not to go and see. Song Sung Blue. this is
I,
where...
I don't know. I think...
These musical biopics have now...
But it's not a biopic. It's a biopic
Let me finish.
Of...
I know it's not. Because who would want a musical biopic of Neil Diamond?
Do I need to ring the bell for the death of the actual musical biopic?
No, not yet. Although, hopefully, this will do.
I'll put it away.
I'm sorry, but Neil Diamond... You know, all this Sweet Caroline nonsense, you know, you can have it. Stick it. He's always been useless. Have you seen Neil Diamond in The Jazz Singer? No, you haven't. But everyone who likes Neil Diamond should be sentenced to
I need
watch
to get
it.
Close to the microphone now and say I used to have this argument with a late dear friend of mine called Jim. I love Neil Diamond.
Yeah.
Jim was on your side of the team. You're just reminding me of him now, and I love Neil Diamond. And
when
and
he was in that, when he
it's
in
not the, Neil Diamond's fault that everyone does "Sweet Caroline" ba 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 ba.
No,
on
it's
all
Neil
that.
Diamond's fault that he wrote it. when he was on, for some reason, he turns up in Scorsese's "The Last Waltz," the documentary about the band, and everyone on stage is looking at each other, thinking, "What's he doing here?"
The jazz singer is. Objectionably an awful film, but I loved that soundtrack. It was one of the soundtracks my mum and dad had when I was a kid. I've played it over and over again, although I did used to think, because I didn't know my religion, and I didn't know that I just knew religion had reverends in it, so I thought forever in blue jeans he was saying the Reverend Blue Jeans, because it was a film about religion.
Maybe he should have
But so I can't hate on Neil Diamond the same way that you do, but I can hate on this trailer, which we haven't actually got round to explaining what it is.
Yeah, it's like a Neil Diamond tribute act.
Yes, and it starts off as well, the dreaded line at the opening of a trailer, based on a true story. So and it is the story
Hugh
of
Jackman,
her.
Who I would cross the road to avoid if it was, Kate Hudson, where has she been for the last 15 years?
Waiting to appear as a tribute partner.
Yeah. You know I'm not going to go and see
it. It's not for you, Martin.
It's not for me.
It's based on a documentary about this guy.
So what? People bring these that whole thing that is based on a true story. As soon as I see that, I'm suspicious of that film. Because if that's what you have got to try and... if you think that's going to convince me to go and see it, you're wrong, baby.
We should mention what is the most objectionable about the trailer.
The music?
It's possibly... Well, there's some things to pick from. Hugh Jackman's wig.
Oh, yeah.
Is bad. There's a repeated, which you missed, which must be in the film loads, I guess, because it's repeated in the trailer at least three or four times, where he uses dialogue that is the title of a Neil Diamond song.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I could feel the need for my eyes to be peeled.
Well, I might just have half a bottle of wine and go and watch it.
I think this might be one where we could do 2 minutes hate on. So when it comes out, maybe it'll be... Because I think it's going to be a Christmas movie. It's coming out at Christmas.
Yeah.
That's going to spoil your Christmas.
Or make it, if you like watching that kind of thing. Right, shall we try and play some music?
God, look at well, the half an hour we did there. I did.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping it works. It might be a bit quiet. So we had Dave Holloway on the show last week, introducing some songs from independent films. Spirit of Independence Film Festival is going on as we speak at the Light.
Yes, it's on this weekend.
And we're going to catch some stuff tomorrow, aren't we? We're going to
go
and see Redux and the VHS
Massacre. Whatever,
yeah. I thought I would carry on with the theme of last week of songs from nice indie-style films, but I'm going more recently, say, this year. So we reviewed Caught Stealing on the show, Darren Aronofsky's film, Caught Stealing, a couple of weeks ago on the show.
You did.
We gave it a good review.
You did.
I enjoyed it. It's set in late 90s, so there is some period music in the film from that era, but the Idols, Bristol band The Idols, have written a soundtrack for it as well. And this, Keep Everything Crossed, is the
or
title.
I'll be singing.
Is the title track. Run, Rabbit, Run. Well, let's see. Maybe you'll hear it, maybe you won't.
Make way for God.
That was Rabbit Run, not Run Rabbit Run, as Martin advised me, which is from Dad's Army, but Rabbit Run.
Was it from
the Idols from Caught Stealing?
Did they do the music for the Dad's Army remake?
Maybe. You never know. They're very talented, Bristol lads. Could have done. Oh, phew. Oh, I'm just quite relieved that we've got some music to play you. That's good. So that was it. Features in the film Caught Stealing, which was out earlier this year. Still on the cinemas. I recommend it. Catch it. Some reviews now from telly.
Yes, there's a few television series erupting on our screens.
It's that time of year, isn't it? It's like autumn is coming. It's getting colder. Good stuff's coming on the telly. Well, allegedly
this was
good
how
stuff.
It used to be on the the BBC and ITV decades ago when they used to leave all their good stuff for like autumn, didn't they? Whereas now it's just Strictly and a new series of Bake Off. Gee, thanks, everyone.
But Netflix.
Things are different.
Well, this links to the song. Well, it doesn't link to the song, but
the first show is Black Rabbit on Apple Plus with Jude Law and Jason Bateman. And this is sort of like... how could I best describe it? A cross between The Bear and The Sopranos.
Oh, I've never watched The Bear and I don't like The Sopranos. I'm out, Martin.
Don't worry, because it's nowhere near as good as either of them. These are two brothers. Jude Law runs this hip restaurant in New York, which is the toast of the town, and he wants to move and get an even bigger venue. Jason Bateman is the ne'er-do-well brother who is a gambling addict, drug addict, winds up doing in some very nasty business down in Reno, has to come back to New York to try and get some money, even though there seems to be half of the crime world of New York waiting for him to arrive back and get the money that he owes back from them. And then, as you can imagine, this all spirals with, by the end of episode two, both brothers are in the hole to local gangsters who were... Jason Bateman's already had one finger cut off. And there it goes. I weren't particularly taken with it. It seemed very derivative of those other two shows. And I know this isn't particularly what you say you like, without what I love about those two shows in it, you know. There weren't enough cooking, for one thing.
Or dancing.
Or dancing, yeah. Or people just people getting lost in the Pine Barrens.
Well,
you know, it's give it a try, but if you give up after two episodes,
nobody's going to blame you.
No.
Well, another new... everyone's really excited about this. Stephen Knight's new Netflix project, The House of Guinness. I've only watched the first episode. We're set in Dublin, 1868. So the head of the Guinness, the patriarch of the Guinness business empire, has died. It's setting up the scene with his four children who are due to inherit. There is obviously a lot of exposition for us ignorant English audience who don't know our Irish history, which is most of us because we're not really taught it. But there is tension in the streets. There are people campaigning for Free Ireland. He is sort of very much, Guinness is seen as very much the part of the Protestant establishment. What is James Norton's part in this? He is a kind of like he's kind of the manager, if you like, for the business.
He's the one that gets things sorted, isn't he?
Yes, but with an Irish accent. We're not going to do that.
Oh, yes, you've got an Irish accent because the trailer I saw, I didn't actually hear him speak, so I didn't know if he was. Well, I don't know how authentic some of those Irish accents are anyway.
I think a lot of the cast are. There are some young Irish cast, excellent, but obviously James Norton isn't. I struggled to really get into it. I've only watched the first episode and there's a lot of like exposition but I've got a new genre of television which I'm calling Ta-da television. And it's in this television. nobody walks down a set of stairs. They do it as if they're Vogue models in slightly slow motion. And I was just like, it's a lot of style over substance so far.
They do it with that Gary Glitter look. You know, you used to do that look to camera.
And that's not very popular anymore.
Do you
want to touch? Yeah, I wanted to like it. I really wanted to like it because I like Peaky Blinders and I love the style of that, but I want something on its own style, I suppose. Mm. And maybe I'm just too old for this stuff, Martin. And I want to see television like I remember from the 90s, noughties. I don't know. Maybe it's me that's the problem. But I just stop showing off and tell me the story.
I mean, I've been... In recent weeks, months, years, I've moaned about the same old actors turning up in things.
And this is at least a young, fresh cast, mostly.
Although James Norton is appearing everywhere at the moment.
Yeah.
But I would also say some of this goes for writers as well.
Mm.
And Knight has been churning it out recently. Mm. And in the same way that Taylor Sheridan used to be good with some of the stuff he was doing for... Netflix and Paramount and that, he has spread himself so thinly now. You know, you can write these scripts yourself when one of his shows starts, and it's getting really, really tired. And you want some new voices.
Yeah, but I think the thing is, for me, what I was excited about for this is the subject and the setting and the time, and there's so much interesting history, and there'll be fictionalized characters in within this story,
yeah, of course, yeah.
But there's some truth in it, and there is the backdrop is, you know, a really interesting story that we should be talking about and hearing. So I don't know. I'm going to keep trying, and just maybe hope it gets to the bit more to the crux of it in the next episode.
I'm going to leave it because stylistically. Sort of like you said, I found it empty, and it had the shot which makes me think, don't even bother. And it was a slow motion shot of James Norton walking towards the camera while something exploded. Give me a break.
Yeah, and there's a lot of walking down, you know, steamy alleyways as well, which you'll
steamy
have seen.
Steamy alleyways!
Yeah. Ta-da, television, the Ta-da. New genre.
You heard it here first. Yeah.
But universally praised everywhere else, so, you know, you may be...
As always...
Maybe we're just too old for this stuff.
No, maybe we're just honest. And if you're a fan of Slow Horses, Season 5 has opened on Apple this week. Gary Oldman and as Jackson Lamb and his crowd of secret agent misfits... I don't know if I was finding this a bit tired as well. So many of the interesting characters have gone, and we lose another one in the first episode of this series. I think this is my... In some ways I enjoy it, and it uses London brilliantly, photographically and cinematically. But I'm getting a bit fed up with the people who are in it now. And the characters that I really liked or that I had any concern about just seemed to have been thinned out a little too much. And
well, not Gary Oldman. He's got a fat suit on for this, hasn't he?
And maybe he could just have the slightest wash in this, which may have... But... It's only one episode, and they're coming out one episode a week. So
old school, nice.
But we shall see how it goes. But I thought the last season 4, it did too much, and it was all over the place, and a bit too big on the action sequences, like this one was from the first scene.
Right.
So, but I'll give this one.
Worth
there wasn't a shot of Gary Oldman walking in slow motion towards the camera.
Putting his collar up explosion with the big top hat. Yeah. So our summary of our TV reviews there is basically go to the cinema.
go
to the cinema, it's better. cinema.
It's a new season of Man versus Food, I think.
Well, on Sunday... me and some friends and I went to see one of our favourite films of the year, Tom Basden and Tim Key's The Ballad of Wallace Island. Tim Key was in appearing in person and doing a Q&A at the end, and we've got a photo with him looking like a hostage. We were literally the last people to get our photos taken with him, and he really wanted to go meet his friends and get some pizza, bless him. But it's one of my favourite films of the year, and like my other favourite film of the year is Sinners, and the pair of these films really focus on the importance of music to people. Different genres of music. Tom Basden wrote and performed the songs in the film, and this is him with Carey Mulligan and Our Love.
Sometimes when you sleep, you look like you're on the bottom of the sea. Sometimes when you smile, I can see how you would have looked as a child. When your eyes are gold, it seems impossible to think we could ever grow old. When your eyes are bright, It seems impossible to think you're not creating the light. Let's walk in the sun. Let our palms read to each other of what's to come. Let's walk in the rain and let the wind carry us home again. When the sky is full of stars, it seems impossible to think that they don't know who we are. When the trees are blue, it seems impossible to think that they're not doing it for you. Oh, love, can you hear me call? Will you break my heart or break my fall? Sometimes when I sleep, I hold my breath just to hear you breathe. Sometimes I get scared when I open my eyes, you won't be there. When your eyes are gold, it seems impossible to think we could ever grow old. When your eyes are bright, it seems impossible to think you're not creating light.
You are listening to the film show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and on digital. And that was Our Lives, Tom Basden and Carrie Mulligan, from the soundtrack of The Ballad of Wallace Island. And I just hope to say that Tom Basden doesn't start appearing on everything, because I think he's brilliant. And yeah, if you haven't seen Here We Go, you need to get that show into your life.
I binged it on iPlayer. It's a lovely little sitcom, isn't it? And it just looks like a harmless little family sitcom. He's set in Bedford because he said that's the most harmless place he could think of.
And it was funny, see, I thought, I'm going to hate this. And I was brilliant.
Lovely.
Okay, so we're going to have a quick romp around cinema releases.
Yeah, very quickly touch on all of you.
Go on then.
All of You is a romantic drama about two university friends. There's a kind of dystopian near future idea to the beginning of it, and then they just sort of drop it, where everyone meets their soulmate. You can go and find on a very expensive test, have a test, and meet your soulmate. And at the beginning of the film, he is taking his university friend, and you look at them, they're clearly meant to be together. It's Imogen Poots and Brett Goldstein. Brett Goldstein has also co-written it. They're obviously meant to be together. She finds someone, she gets hooked with her soulmate, and then they cheat on their soulmate because they obviously love each other. It's an interesting idea to begin with, and there are good things about it. And really, Imogen Poots and Brett Goldstein are it, and Zoe Ashton appears as well. The way that they tell the story, it jumps in time, and it only really looks at them. And by the end of it, you just you're just a bit annoyed at them because they're just selfish lovers who are cheating on people. I'm not quite sure it goes with the... It doesn't really add up to some of its parts, unfortunately. It's a bit dull. I can't recommend it. Sorry.
Okay.
Although, can I just say, I would like to see them in something else that's good, because they are good together.
Stop talking about it now.
There is good things
that,
to say.
No, that was going to be a short thing. I'll show you how you do a short review. Riff Raff on Amazon should be good. Bill Murray and Ed Harris. It's like a thriller which thinks it's really clever, and it's not. And it's a really empty experience, so don't bother. Thank you.
Steve is one of my films of the year. I was already predisposed to like it. It came out last week and we didn't review it because I was doing other things. It is the same team that brought Small Things Like These to us last year, which is now my Christmas film of the year. Cillian Murphy plays a teacher in it. It's also got appearances by Little Sims, who plays a teacher in it as well. She's a brilliant musician. We're going to hear a bit from her later. Emily Watson appears, Tracy Ullman appears, but there's a really, really interesting performance by a young actor called Jay Lysergo, who plays a character called Shy. The premise of the film is Cillian Murphy plays this teacher, Steve, who is... You meet him on his way to a school day, but it's an unusual school. It's kind of like somewhere between a reform school and a borstal or a boarding school. And it's for problem kids, but they're really young men because they're about 17 to 18 years old. And they've been rejected by society for whatever reasons that they are. They've had encounters with the law. They're their last chance, basically. But they are young men and they have all this energy. Cillian Murphy plays a man on the edge, really, who's trying to hold it all together. He's underfunded. His school's underfunded. It's coming to the end, and it's a crucial day in the life of this school from his arrival. There's a TV film crew there. It just exposes all of the tension. And it's just such a wonderful piece. You think... It's going to be, because it's set in the late 90s, just before the end of the Tory long, like, 18-year rule. Mm. So there's lots of, like, background information there that's really key. But it doesn't do this thing that these films sometimes do of lecturing you about the situation. It is just looking at the humanity of it and how these people deal with it. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's on in the cinema for about another week and then it's on Netflix. But I really recommend you go to the cinema because there's some great sound and editing in it that you want to see on a big screen, I think. That's Steve.
So you're rating that then?
Highly rating. It's one of my films of the year.
Okay, right. Well, the big one this week is Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another, which is already being talked about as being the film of the year. I'm not going to quite go along with that, but anyway, it's certainly a big movie. Leonardo DiCaprio, Benicio del Toro, Regina Hill, and it's a film about ex-radicals, revolutionaries, updated from a Thomas Pynchon novel, which was talking about 60s revolutionaries like the Weather Underground. In the Reagan times, this is from people who were rebelling against Bush, and it's in the current times. And as you can imagine, everything in it, you recognise what is going on at the moment. It's 2¾ hours long, though, and I have to say, it's stunning in places, but... There are also bits where I thought, can you just move it on a bit? Sean Penn looks like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in it, and he's like a mad megalomaniac right wing military thug. There is some amazing sequences in it, an incredible Johnny Greenwood score. And it's been shot in VistaVision. And really, I think the biggest screen you can see it on will be the best way to actually try it.
Yeah,
and
I think
catch
I,
it.
I did myself short by going. I did see it on a big screen, but I was right at the front because I booked quite late.
Right.
And I really think I would have liked to have sat back, especially for that roller coaster desert car chase. That was amazing.
I mean, amazingly, Anderson does this car pursuit thing at the end, which like reinvents how to shoot a car chase, doesn't it?
It was stunning. I like you, I sort of struggled some of the... Towards the end, I was just going, skip, come on, let's get... Yeah. But it's beautiful action sequences all through, really, aren't there?
You know, and if it's going to be the one that wins the Oscars, then... Let it be. Although it's cost God knows how much money. And I don't think people in red states are going to go and see it.
It's a ridiculously expensive one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And how are they going to make... They're not going to make money back.
They're not going to make the money back. But half of America won't go to see it.
We haven't mentioned Sean Penn in it as well.
I did say Sean Penn.
Did you? No, but his performance.
Yeah, I mean, it was, oh, we should be getting a best supporting actor. No. He was like a cartoon.
It was.
It was like he was in a Roadrunner cartoon. And although... Chase Infinity, and I believe this is her first film, as Willa.
Oh, she's great, yeah.
She lights up the screen.
Yeah.
And she was the character I was most interested in, and I just wish the film had stayed with her.
And she makes it make sense as well, because there's a lot hanging on her father, Leonardo DiCaprio's love for her. And Yeah.
So I will go and see it again, though, I think, on a bigger screen.
I will. I'll give it a break and go and see it again so I can get that
maybe
full...
We'll have a reset on it in a week or two's time.
I think I'm going to skip the last track and we're just going to go into the new releases, what's out this week, so that we can play
one
track
I'd like
to finish.
Do you want to kick off on that? Or?
Well, new releases on Friday. You got The Smashing Machine, which we mentioned with The Rock, and Urchin, which is Harris Dickinson's directorial debut about a homeless young man played by Frank Dillon, which looks fantastic. Nice, interesting British film. You've got to see the Ghostbusters at the Light, right? There's an interesting documentary at the Light called The Dating Game, which is was nominated for the Sundance Grand Jury Prize, which is like looking at single men in China trying to get a boot camp date. It's quite good.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
At the Barnsley Parkway Cinema next Saturday afternoon, there's a special event, Ken Loach and Kez, which is celebrating the publishing of a book called Ken Loach and Kez. There will be a screening of the film. There will be a recorded introduction from Loach. He won't actually be there. And there will be members of the cast doing readings from the book. Now, I'm going to assume they will be people who were school kids.
Yes, yeah.
or in the football team. Admission is £20, but you get a copy of the book with that, and you will get it signed by any of the members of the cast that are there.
Excellent.
And just to finish off with, tomorrow afternoon, Sexy Beast at the Curzon Film Club. No.
We're going to leave you with a brilliant closing track from Steve by Little Sims. A little bit of drum and bass in here if we get to it, which is fantastic. We'll see you next week. Enjoy your films.
Out of sight, out of mind, out of time, out of love. Out of breath, out of body, out of friends. I can tell that you don't get out as much. With these rocks on your back weighing you down, cause you feel all of you is not enough. You're out of touch and out of sight, out of mind, out of time, out of love. Less is more unless you feel that you're lesser than the rest. You think that you're out of clutch. Out of money in your pocket, raging doesn't stop until you let the demons out your closet. They out to get you cause you putting out a message like, say the response won't affect you. Out of respect you, say you're out of sight, out of mind, out of time, out of love.